And welcome to Building Bridges, your community and labor report on this first day of the new year. I'm Amy Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Happy New Year, and let's get rid of the old one. A lot of bad things happened.
Well, let's use the opportunity that adversity presents to us to plow ahead, no puns intended, given the weather that we've had in the last couple of days. But let's indeed move forward and figure out how we can turn this moment into one that is advantageous for the process of democracy, for the process of transforming a society that has been less than egalitarian and humane to too many of our sisters and brothers. You know, Ken, aside from wishing our listeners a good year, and we have to make it that good year, both one that is personally satisfying and gratifying, and one that I know for both of us, Ken, is politically, morally, and ethically one that becomes meaningful and useful to advancing the cause of social justice. I cannot proceed without saying that, again, our program is going to look at the issue of democracy today and social justice and where media fits into constructing that process.
Democracy here and now?
Democracy here and now. But I would first like to say, and unequivocally, that Sharon Harper, Bernard White, Eileen Sutton, Serene, Janice K. Bryant, Ursula, Rosalie, all...
The band. I mean, what a word.
Well, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about that kind of terminology and what it portends for us. But all of you, my sisters and brothers, people who are creative, constructive, meaningful, have helped build and supported this station, who do not have free access to it, and you, all of our listeners, who do not have free and easy access to this community-based, end quote, radio station. We want you back. We, as a labor program, as people who are activists for decades, know that there must be a revocation of the terminations of the bar to access for all to this station, and there must be the implementation of a democratic process that surpasses what we've had. We must be part of the construction of that, and that any methodology that stands in the face of democracy portends nothing good. One cannot, in late night hours, on holiday weekends, change locks, deny access and deny dialogue to people, and be pretenders to something constructive out of that methodology. Actions do speak louder than words, and the ends are never justified by a means that includes lockouts or white or black lists or includes terminations, bannings, which is a word that I, of course, first was acquainted with in South Africa and is most peculiar to hear in the context of this radio station. We want our colleagues back, and we want to be constructive and to reconstruct a process of participation, because this station is an essential connector for progressive issues that thus far have not been heard anywhere else in the media.
I just wanted to say that the solution to the problem here has to do with more democracy rather than less democracy. It has to do with the staff and community groups being involved in decision making more than they were before. The democratic practices that we had before, to some extent, were deteriorating over a number of years, but they were still in place. But for right now, all bets seem to be off. in terms of imposition of changes by management, and also Pacifica coming in here and actually making the decisions rather than WBAI being an autonomous station. I think what we have to do in terms of looking forward is to not only revive the old mechanisms that we have, but also to create some new ones and to include community groups and the listener groups into that. And I think what we need is a stronger contract, and we need better ways of resolving problems at WBAI in terms of self-management. And that's what is going to get us out of this crisis. And it is a crisis.
And, you know, Ken, I have been the unpaid staff representative to the local advisory board, which for some years has put us in proximity of observation of the national board members. I do know all of them personally, and I do know their names, and I do know their world views, which are very much defined by the work that they do and the social commitments they have or haven't made. And at some point it is profoundly important to talk about what the individuals, the key individuals, and that are John Murdoch, Vice Chair of the Board, Ken Ford, Chair of the Board, David Acosta, what people like Michael Palmer, who is the Treasurer of the Board. Who are these people? What are their backgrounds? What are their statements? What are their actions? No, it's not about personalities. It's about the way people have lived their lives and the philosophies they've advanced. And with that, though, I want to bring on people who have played a significant role over the years in looking at the question of democracy and media, particularly within the context of this very important station. And I am very pleased to have with us Peter Frank. Peter Frank is, well, I guess Peter got involved in media issues in the 1950s in Berkeley. In 1973, he became a member of the California Berkeley Local Advisory Board. And then in 1974, he became the LAB, the Local Advisory Board representative to the Pacifica National Foundation Board. And then in 1980 to 84, he became president of the National Board. Since then, he has been intimately involved in the cause of micro radio and media democracy, and he serves as the chair now of the National Lawyers Guild Center for Democratic Communication. Peter, welcome to WBAI.
Thanks, Mimi. Glad to be with you.
And we also have Matthew Lazar. Matthew Lazar is the author of Pacifica Radio, The Rise of an Alternative Network, and he's a visiting professor at Riverside in California. And Matthew, it's a pleasure to have you as well.
Greetings. Hello, everybody.
These people are very spoiled, Ken, because they're in California, and it's and of course our engineer today, Anastasia, is recently from there too. So they're very, very arrogant in relationship
to
our weather.
Well, I think California may have something to teach us, Mimi. So let's not get East Coast chauvinistic here.
Oh, quite the contrary. I was very jealous, and I think they have a great deal to teach us. And I believe we're going to have shortly also Karen Frillman. We're trying to reach her. Karen is in less clement weather upstate New York, and Karen is has been the chair of the local advisory board at WBAI. She helped locate the venue that we are presently in. She's been a producer on a number of stations and has been nominated for 6 Grammy Awards for her audio radio work. And with that, we also may be joined by someone to give us a little spiritual sustenance during these hard times, and that is Father Lawrence Lucas, a long-term activist in many communities. As a matter of fact, I think I see him kind of trundling in, galoshes in hand, as we speak. Father Lawrence Lucas has also been the chaplain at Rikers Island for some years and is involved in unions himself there. So with that, why don't we begin with Matt Lazar? And sorry if we have some technical problems here today. Matt, why don't we begin the process? We spoke about language earlier on, And one of the terms that has been used to indicate what can or can't be said over the airwaves is a gag rule, which would seem to prohibit discourse, or at least it's been interpreted in some of the Pacifica stations as prohibiting any discourse on quote-unquote internal affairs. Many of us think these are news items and discuss them, but where does the terminology gag rule come from, and why should we be concerned about both its implementation and its origin terminology-wise?
Well, what's interesting about the word gag rule, you know, when Dan Coughlin was dismissed, terminated, fired for airing that 37-second reader about the Old Pacifica Day last year.
Matthew,
yes?
I don't want to take anything for granted. Not everybody knows who Dan Coughlin is, and not everybody knows what you're referring to. So you have to be, we have to give this the full parameter of information. We are experiencing some technical difficulties. We do have with a new engineer, and she's getting ready to learn the board. Matthew? Well, we're not doing so well here. Let's try that again. Anastasia, you give us the cues.
Okay. Well, you should still have...
Well,
you still have Matthew.
Peter, Karen, we have nobody. While we do the reconnects there, let's again welcome Father Lucas to our airwaves.
And he just saved us, actually, here.
He saved us. Well, that is
thank
his
you.
Clerical role, I dare say. Father Lucas, I described you as you were coming in from the hinterlands of Manhattan as someone, of course, who's been active for decades in the community, someone who's provided the movements with spiritual sustenance and been intimately involved in Rikers Island with the incarcerated community there and so on, and certainly been a guest at WBAI and an activist most strategically. I'm interested in how you begin to understand the role of democracy and the function of this media in the communities of peoples that you serve.
Well, first of all, my understanding of democracy, it's people power and power to the people. And that the people have a voice and a say in what concerns the people. Fundamentally, excuse me, I'm having a cold. But fundamentally, that's what I understand as democracy. I wasn't so sure of where your second question...
Well, let's talk about democracy, where we are, and how we're doing it. We've basically been talking about Pacifica Radio and WBAI, mm-hmm. and I know that you have been a listener, you've been a contributor for a number of years, and that I assume that you're very concerned about what's been going on here. So why don't we get your impressions about the current crisis?
Well, it is definitely a crisis, and I think it's an anti-democracy crisis. You see, too often I hear people who is boiling this down to an internal conflict. That may be true, but that's like saying while the wolves are knocking at the door of the chicken coop, that you're advising the chickens to ignore the gang of wolves on the outside and let's take care of our far less important internal policies. For me, this is a question of Pacifica's board. And when I look at that board, I see in terms of membership a very drastic contradiction in terms of what we say WBAI is supposed to represent. In fact, this morning I heard some things that were somewhat comical, but I thought that not only comical, but it was insulting the intelligence of the very intelligent audience that BAI have. For example, one individual who was mentioned on the board, I heard the excuse, well, now he is now retired. And that was supposed to give the impression that being retired It's like saying a police officer who for 20 years was on the police force, the day he retired, the police mentality goes out of the window. And, you know, it was ludicrous. But I see this not as primarily, and I think a lot of folks are making that mistake, a conflict between, for example, two people whom I love and admire, Bernard and Utrice. I think this thing is far more important than any of the individuals. It is a question of, is Pacifica going to change the fundamental philosophy and purpose and meaning of WBAI? And therefore, anybody who collaborates in that, I have to identify as the enemy of the people.
Well, we're going to try again. I believe we have, thank you, Father Lucas, also Matthew Lazar, Peter Frank, and we hope Karen Frillman back on the line. And Matthew, we were beginning to have a discussion on the question of the gag rule, because I think the origin of that and its terminology, as it's used in Pacifica, is not insignificant for structuring our discussion during the next 45 minutes. Matthew?
Well, it's interesting to note that, as far back as I can tell, the origins of the word gag rule have their roots in the controversy over slavery in the United States. In the 1830s, the abolitionist movement took advantage of the fact that the First Amendment allows Americans to petition and redress for grievances by submitting to Congress huge numbers of petitions with hundreds of thousands of names demanding the end of slavery in the District of Columbia. The pro-slavery Southern representatives in the House of Representatives responded to this with a series of maneuvers, of technical maneuvers, which allowed them to table or postpone discussing these petitions on the floor of the House of Representatives. And this was referred to by the abolitionists as the gag rule. The person who was the most vociferous in his opposition to the gag rule was John Quincy Adams, former president of the United States, now a congressman to this as the gag rule, and constantly went around the country in the 1840s demanding the right to talk about these positions on the floor of the House of Representatives, and kept on saying over and over and over again, am I gagged or not? Finally, he was able to rescind the gag rule on the floor of the House of Representatives in 1844. Now, I don't think that the people who started to use the word gag rule, I don't know how the word got glommed from that to Pacifica, obviously. I don't think that anyone had that in mind when they used the gag rule, but it is an interesting historical parallel.
Well, language is certainly not insignificant, but let's take off from there, Matthew. The question of a democracy, how do you build a more democratic context? What is the history of this organization, and how has it begun to change?
Well, when Lewis Hill started this organization, well, let's start with WBAI. Lewis Hill was dead for 3 years when WBAI was given to the Pacifica Foundation by Louis Schweitzer in 1960. And I think that in the 60s and the 1970s, and Peter Frank can also talk about this, I think, quite eloquently, you saw something of a democratic revolution within media, not as democratic as some of us would like, but a democratic revolution within media, which had its roots, I think, in the spirit of the 1960s and in the student movement of the 1960s. I'd like to read a quote from something which I think some of your listeners are familiar with, which was the Port Huron Statement of 1961, which was the founding statement of Students for a Democratic Society, and which I think very much informed the thinking of the activists who worked with Pacifica in the 1960s and the 1970s. Can I read that? It's a short paragraph.
Sure.
Far be it from us to ever prevent anybody from reading the Port Huron Statement on WBAI. Go ahead.
I quote from the introduction. Some would have us believe that Americans feel contentment amidst prosperity. But might it not better be called a glaze above deeply felt anxieties about their role in the new world? And if these anxieties produce a developed indifference to human affairs, do they not as well produce a yearning to believe that there is an alternative to the present, that something can be done to change circumstances in the school, the workplaces, the bureaucracies, the government. It is to this yearning, this latter yearning, at once the spark and engine of change, that we direct our present appeal. The search for truly democratic alternatives to the present and a commitment to social experimentation with them is a worthy and fulfilling human enterprise, one which moves us and, we hope, others today. The search for truly democratic alternatives to the present. The activists who sort of glommed themselves onto the Pacifica Radio Network in the 1960s and 1970s really were moved, I think, and to a large extent from their experiences within the Cold War University, to try to democratize American life both on a micro and a macro level, both on the highest level in terms of government and on the in terms of daily life, in terms of the institutions with which we all interface. The Pacifica Radio Network became a more democratic organization during that period. It instituted more democratic procedures of advice and consent from local advisory boards. It did all of those things in order to meet that standard. And there was also, at the same time, the emergence of a community radio network across the United States, which was also informed by that kind of spirit. I think that what happened to the Pacifica Radio Network to some extent during the 1980s and the 1990s was that it became contained. What do I mean by that? I mean that while thousands of people were literally rushing into the Pacifica Radio Network to take advantage of this democratic experiment, the rest of the media universe began to clamp down on community accessible local access airtime. We all know the story. Peter Frank can certainly take it from here, talking about the banning of micro radio in 1978, the abandonment of the fairness doctrine, which was a doctrine that said that when somebody says something on the radio, someone of the powerful says something on the radio, you have the right to go on that radio station and talk back. The centralization of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the centralization of national public radio. We saw many public radio stations abandon their local volunteer airtime and change their NPR stations to much more centralized common carrier kind of radio stations, where you mostly got national public radio rather than local programming. And finally, the coup de grace, the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which basically has ratcheted up the price of radio stations because of its monopolistic law, and has created a situation in which many radio stations, commercial especially, really just can't afford, after they've been purchased by corporations or other groups, to provide local public affairs airtime because of the amount of debt service they're carrying. All of these things have resulted in a radio network, the Pacifica Radio Network, in which there is really nowhere else to go for people who want publicly accessible, who believe in publicly accessible local access airtime. What I saw in the 1980s, what I saw was community radio leaders, national board members on the Pacifica Radio Network, local advisory board members, station staff, become weary trying to manage this oasis and trying to keep it democratic. And I saw them lose faith.